Looking forward to this conversation. The news breaking yesterday that Jimmy Carter, at the age of 39, at the age of 100, our 39th president, had passed away. And I talked to Dave about it, and we decided to pursue Jonathan Alter, because Jonathan Alter's book in 2020 on Jimmy Carter is viewed by many, if not most, as the definitive book on Jimmy Carter and his entire life, his very best Jimmy Carter life. And Jonathan Alter is with us. Jonathan, I appreciate you coming on. Jonathan, like all of our guests, he is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. If you've paid attention to politics for a number of decades, Jonathan Alter has been all over it, whether it's in books, in print, documentaries, radio analysis, television analysts, and he is with us to talk about the life of Jimmy Carter. Thank you so much for your time. Let me pick up on one of the lines and one of the quotes from your book. Emory University President James Laney once said, "Jimmy Carter is the only person in history for whom the presidency was a stepping stone." Why was Carter so committed to so much after he left the White House?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I think that he was always an intense person. I asked his son, Jeff, once if he could use one word, what would it be to describe your father? And that's the word he used, intense. And so he'd always been a problem solver. He'd always been in search of how to use his faith to help other people as well as himself. And he always had a sense of injustice. And so when he left the presidency, he indicated before he even left that he didn't want to play golf and, you know,
make speeches,
go on board, and, yeah, make speeches.
Right.
And he wanted to do something different, but he wasn't sure what that was. And then in the middle of the night, a couple of years after he left office, he woke up in the middle of the night and he was thinking about Camp David, where, you know, he had brought peace between Egypt and Israel. This is the most durable, most significant peace treaty since World War II. And imagine if Egypt and Israel were fighting each other now in the Middle East on top of everything else. So he was thinking about Camp David, and he thought, why can't I continue the kind of work I did at Camp David and start a center for conflict resolution? So that was the original idea of the Carter Center. And then it broadened into many other areas of global health and, you know, eradicating a disease that afflicted 3.5 million people, and now I think there's about 15 people in the world who have guinea worm disease, and a whole set of other things he did on democracy promotion, and not to mention championing Habitat for Humanity. So I think he had always felt a calling. He'd always been almost a pilgrim, and he needed to find an outlet for his astonishing energy and that of his wife, Rosalind, because they did all this together.
When you think back and all the work you did on his presidency itself, and there's been even a further examination on that in the last 24 hours, what would you say is the biggest fallacy, the most misleading, the false perception about his 4 years as the president of this country?
So I actually asked him that question, and the answer that he gave, I agree with. He said the biggest misimpression was that he was weak. And any study of Jimmy Carter suggests, you know, what a tough-minded character he was, sometimes to a fault. When he was governor of Georgia, they called him Jungle Jimmy. But the reason that he was perceived as weak is that he didn't bomb Iran after they took our hostages, because he didn't want the hostages killed. Now, arguably, he let himself be held hostage by the Ayatollah, by maybe talking about the hostages a lot more than he should. You know, there are American hostages in Gaza right now. You never hear anything about them.
Nope.
And that's partly because Biden didn't want to repeat that mistake of Carter. But in that sense,
was it also the media too, Jonathan? That, it was such a huge part of, I mean, Ted Koppel and Nightline evolving that way. And it was every day. We talked, as you know very well, about the hostages and when are we getting them or what do we have to do? That and for, for those who have hostages abroad right now, they wish that was happening, but that media coverage is so different.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Walter Cronkite said, that's the way it is, November 28th, 1979, the whatever day of captivity for the U.S. hostages in Iran, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes. It was as if Netanyahu was, you know, obsessed with getting the hostages back, more than fighting Hamas. So Carter didn't want to go to war with Iran. I think he was right about that. He felt if he did that all the hostages would be killed, but he also, he knew that by making this decision, even his wife wondered why he didn't just bomb them, by showing restraint and eventually successfully negotiating for their release, that he could save their lives. And indeed he did. They all came home intact.
Jonathan Alter is with us. We're talking about his book on Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, the 39th president, passing away. When we think about his life after and human rights and his willingness to meet with some pretty evil, vicious dictators, and sometimes a dynamic with the president at the time where sometimes, as you know well, it could be great. They appreciated what he was doing. And other times they were furious. How would you describe that part where one moment the current president loved that Carter was doing it, and another time the current president wanted to remind him, by the way, I'm the president now. You are not the president.
So, you know, he had this situation with several presidents, but maybe the most memorable was his relationship with George H.W. Bush. So initially, Carter goes down to supervise an election in Nicaragua and as a former president, monitor the election. And Daniel Ortega, the communist, loses. He's the incumbent, and he loses the election. And Carter stays up all night with Ortega, and he says, look, I know it's really hard to lose. I lost myself. But you just have to follow the election returns. And so Ortega did what Donald Trump did not do, and he relinquished power very, very reluctantly. Now he's back in. Years later, he's back in. But he left, and a woman named Violeta Chamorro became the new president. And George H.W. Bush, as he told me when I interviewed him not too long before he died, was thrilled with Carter. And James Baker, the Secretary of State, was too. He took this big problem they had in Central America off their desk, and they were thrilled. But then just a couple of years later, in 1991, when Bush went to war with Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War, Carter wrote a letter to other heads of state, the National Security Council members, saying, you know, don't vote for the resolution authorizing force. And there were people in the Bush administration who thought this was treasonous. You know, to have a former president basically violating the Logan Act doing this. And Bush himself told me, you know, we're only supposed to have one president at a time. And that was really undercutting me. And I didn't like it. But he finished the interview, though, by saying, notwithstanding how upset I was about Carter doing that. And Carter's excuses for it were not convincing when I asked him about it. Bush said, notwithstanding that, he was a much undervalued American president, and he did a lot of important things that are not recognized both in office and after he left office. So Bush ended up admiring him despite having been undermined by him. And the same experience for Bill Clinton, who had a fraught relationship for many years with Jimmy Carter. But a couple of years ago when I went, my wife and I went to their 75th wedding anniversary a few years ago, to the surprise of the Carter family, Bill and Hillary Clinton went all the way to Plains, and they buried the hatchet after many years of very interesting tension between the two of them.
Jonathan Alter's book, His Very Best Jimmy Carter Life. Jonathan is with us. So let's talk about the speech in 79, which is viewed as the malaise speech, which you have pointed out and others have pointed out. He never used that exact word, but it was at a time in our country when our country was struggling, right, with inflation and unemployment, and people were questioning. Again, as you said, it was Carter up for the job? And, you know this extraordinarily well. Right now, if we're getting the truth from a politician, and too often it's the rarity, if you're getting the truth when it's a lot of difficult information to hear, but it's the reality, and we have to deal with it, that's so – it just doesn't happen. I mean, if you ask a politician now to admit a mistake, there's zero chance that is going to happen. What stands out about that speech, and is there any chance that type of speech could happen today?
No. So it was an extraordinary speech where he asked for sacrifice and said that the American people have become too materialistic and they needed to tighten their belts in the energy crisis and recognize that they needed to restore their faith in institutions. And he was telling the American people that part of the problem was them. And this was used by his political opponents to great effect. And it's just unimaginable today. So he has a line in his speech where he says, he's come back from Camp David where he met with a great cross-section of people to talk about what was going wrong in his administration. And he said, I heard from a Southern governor who said, Mr. President, you are just managing the government, not leading. So can you imagine any president telling the American people, millions and millions of viewers,
acknowledging
my
that.
Critic said this, and he's probably right?
Yeah.
It's just unimaginable now. And so this speech is just a fascinating insight, not just into Carter's ability, willingness to accept accountability, and also what a bitter decade the 1970s were. And this speech, somebody should give it today, but nobody will.
Jonathan Alter, our guest. Jonathan, it was a pleasure. Great respect for your work over the years. Again, I would encourage people, when so many are discussing Jimmy Carter for all the valid reasons, if you want the book out there, this is a great one. His Very Best Jimmy Carter Life, our guest, Jonathan Alter. Thank you very much for coming on, sir. Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. Thanks so much for having me.
Jonathan Alter here on CC. I want to say this briefly, and then I want your feedback. You heard Jonathan make this point, and it's been made, and I know when people pass away, we have a tendency, and it's a good tendency, to speak more glowingly about them. But Jimmy Carter and character and decency and respect and dignity, Dave, those words come out a lot, right?
Repeatedly.
I mean, and even those who hated everything he did as a president. Yeah, exactly. And by the way, he wasn't shy. And that doesn't mean there were people who all agree with him, right? And we can have this debate about the presidency. But how much does it really matter anymore? When people vote, and I know people can just assume it's Trump, and it's part of it is Trump, right? Because Trump doesn't care about decency, doesn't care about dignity, doesn't care about character. This is my opinion. You don't have to agree. He cares about winning, and he cares about doing the things that he thinks will benefit the country. And I'll just add, as I've added many times, what benefits him?
Yeah, there's a touch of that.
I think. I've said this many times, I think Donald wakes up every single day of his life. How will this day benefit me? And by the way, it's worked out well. He's worth a bill. He's going to be president for a second time. He's had a good life. But I think even a lot of the MAGA folks are willing to acknowledge, you know, this isn't maybe the guy I want my kids to grow up to be, but you know what? He's the guy I want to be president. And by the way, your vote matters every bit as much as mine. And I'm not saying that you end up voting for someone if you 100% disagree with them in every policy position. But how much does it really matter right now? Because Trump's character does bug me. And the things he says and he'll continue to say and belittles people and bullies people, I think it's pretty awful. But he just kicked his opponent's butt. If you go 7-0 in the swing states, that's a butt kick. And I know in the popular vote he barely won, but most people didn't have him winning. How much does it still matter right now? I'm going to vote for that person. Not only do I agree with most of the positions, but that person is also a decent individual. Have we lost that? Or is Trump a bit of an aberration in that way? And by the way, there are tens and tens of millions of people who don't agree with my position on Trump as a human. I get that. What do you want to say about that? So 24 past 2, I'd love a phone call or a text on this particular topic. 651-461-9226 on CCO.